Pregnancy used to be spoken about in whispers of joy. Today it is often discussed in private fear. Not because women suddenly became fragile, but because they started paying attention. Stories travel faster now. A healthy woman goes into labor and never comes home. Another survives but leaves the hospital injured, dismissed, unheard. These are not rare rumors. They are patterns women recognize even when society refuses to name them. We are told pregnancy is natural. We are told women have always done this. We are told fear is weakness and doubt is selfish. But beneath those phrases sits a quiet truth. The risk is real. The protection is uneven. And the responsibility is placed almost entirely on the person with the most to lose. This fear is not hysteria. It is calculation. It is memory passed between sisters, friends, group chats, and late-night searches. And it forces a hard question. If bringing life is so sacred, why are so many women afraid it might cost them their own? Chapter 1, The Fear Before the Test. The fear starts before the test strip changes color. It lives earlier than that. It shows up in conversations that stop halfway. It sits behind jokes that land too hard. It appears in the pause when someone asks, "So, when are you having a baby?" This fear is not loud. It does not announce itself as panic. It is measured. It is careful. It is a quiet calculation women make long before pregnancy becomes real. For many women today, pregnancy is not imagined as a beginning. It is imagined as exposure. Exposure to risk. Exposure to systems that may not listen. Exposure to consequences that cannot be undone once the process starts. This did not come from nowhere. Historically, pregnancy was dangerous. Women died in childbirth for centuries. Communities knew this. Death was expected often enough that it became folded into life. What changed is not the danger alone. What changed is awareness paired with contradiction. We now live in a time where medicine promises safety but does not always deliver it, where hospitals exist but outcomes still fail, where knowledge is available, yet warnings are dismissed as anxiety. Women see this gap clearly. They see that pregnancy is framed publicly as safe and routine while privately discussed as unpredictable and sometimes lethal. They notice how reassurance replaces preparation, how risk is minimized in language even when evidence suggests caution. This mismatch creates fear. A woman in her 20s wants children. She says this out loud. She also says she is scared. The room shifts. Someone tells her not to think like that. Another reminds her that women have been giving birth forever. Someone else changes the subject. None of these responses address the fear. They discipline it. Fear is treated as a flaw in attitude rather than a response to information. This matters because fear that cannot be spoken does not disappear. It goes underground. Many women now delay pregnancy not because they reject motherhood, but because they do not trust what surrounds it. They want certainty that does not exist. They want guarantees that no one can offer honestly. They ask themselves quiet questions. What if something goes wrong and no one listens? What if pain is ignored? What if warning signs are dismissed as nerves? What if survival becomes a matter of luck rather than care? These questions are not hypothetical. They are informed by stories that repeat with unsettling consistency. A healthy woman collapses days after giving birth. A complaint is overlooked until it is too late. A family is told it was rare. Another woman survives, but with injuries that change her life. She is told this is just how birth is sometimes. These stories circulate without headlines. They move through personal networks. They pass through message threads and voice notes. They reach women long before doctors do. Fear grows there. It is reinforced by how early pregnancy itself is treated. The moment a woman becomes pregnant, her body is reframed as public territory. Advice arrives uninvited. Judgment follows quickly. Risk becomes her personal responsibility, even when outcomes depend on systems beyond her control. She is told to stay calm. Stress is framed as dangerous. Anxiety is portrayed as harmful to the baby. The irony is sharp. She is warned not to fear while given reasons to fear. The fear before the test is also shaped by how little honesty exists about consequences. Pregnancy is marketed socially as glowing and fulfilling. The damage is whispered if mentioned at all. Permanent pain, loss of bodily autonomy, mental health decline. These realities are often reframed as personal weakness rather than outcomes of strain and neglect. Women notice what is left out. They notice how maternal death is discussed as tragedy but rarely as failure. How systemic breakdowns are softened into unfortunate events. how responsibility floats away from institutions and lands back on individual bodies. This creates a form of anticipatory grief. Women grieve outcomes that have not happened yet, because they know how easily they could. Even women who trust medicine feel this tension. Trust is no longer blind, it is conditional. It depends on whether they will be believed when something feels wrong. Fear becomes sharper for those who have seen dismissals up close. A friend whose pain was minimized, a relative whose complications were overlooked, a neighbor whose recovery never fully came. Each story adds weight. This fear does not always present as refusal. Often it presents as delay. One more year, one more promotion, one more savings cushion, one more attempt to feel ready. But readiness here is not about diapers or schedules. It is about survival. Women ask themselves if they are strong enough not just to give birth, but to advocate for themselves while vulnerable, to insist on care while exhausted, to fight for attention while being told to relax. That is a heavy burden to place on anyone. The fear before the test is also shaped by inequality. Some women know the risk is higher for them, not because of biology alone, but because of how systems treat them. They have seen patterns, they have heard warnings, they understand that outcomes are not evenly distributed. This knowledge is not abstract, it is personal. So when society tells women they are overthinking, they hear something else. They hear dismissal. They hear that their survival concerns are inconvenient. Fear becomes rational in this environment. It becomes a form of awareness, a signal that something does not align between promise and reality. This fear does not mean women are rejecting life. It means they are demanding honesty. They want pregnancy to be treated as significant, not casual, as powerful, not trivial, as deserving of protection, not romantic slogans. Until that happens, the fear before the test will remain, and it leads to a deeper realization. If pregnancy requires courage just to begin, what happens once a woman steps fully into a system that has already taught her to doubt its care? That question does not stay theoretical for long. Chapter 2, When the System Fails the Body. The moment pregnancy enters a clinical setting, the fear changes shape. It stops being abstract, it becomes procedural. It becomes about timing, access, response, and belief. This is where trust is tested. Modern maternal care presents itself as advanced and controlled. Machines monitor, charts fill, protocols exist. On paper, risk is managed. In practice, the system often depends on interpretation, judgment, and speed. That is where failure begins. Women learn quickly that being inside a hospital does not guarantee being protected. Many complications are not sudden explosions. They arrive quietly, a headache that will not stop, swelling that feels wrong, pain that does not match expectations, bleeding that is brushed off, breath that shortens slowly. These signals require attention. They require belief. Too often they are met with delay. The structure of care encourages this. Maternal wards are busy. Staff are stretched. Decision-making is hierarchical. When uncertainty appears, hesitation follows. When a woman raises concern, it must pass through filters. Tone is judged. Emotional state is weighed. Calm is rewarded. Urgency is often mistaken for panic. The result is dangerous. Delayed response is one of the most consistent features in maternal harm, not because knowledge is absent, but because action is postponed. Someone waits to see if symptoms pass. Someone assumes it is normal. Someone underestimates how fast conditions can turn. This delay is not neutral. It has consequences. Women report being told to rest when they needed intervention. They describe asking for help multiple times before being taken seriously. They describe moments when staff changed shifts and information was lost. They describe having to advocate while in pain, exhausted, and frightened. Advocacy under those conditions is not strength. It is survival work forced onto someone at their weakest. The system expects women to be calm, articulate, and persistent at the same time. This expectation is unrealistic. It is also unequal. Disparities in maternal outcomes are not accidental. They reflect how care is distributed, how symptoms are interpreted, and whose voices are trusted. Geography matters, income matters, race matters, immigration status matters. Some women enter the system already carrying risk. They know it. The system knows it. Yet care does not always adjust accordingly. Follow-up appointments are rushed. Warning signs are listed quickly. Instructions are given, then responsibility is shifted. If something goes wrong later, the question quietly becomes why she did not return sooner. This framing protects the system. It isolates the individual. Postpartum care reveals this failure most clearly. After birth, attention drops sharply. The crisis is considered over, the body is expected to recover on schedule. Pain is normalized, fatigue is assumed. Yet many of the most serious complications occur after discharge. Women are sent home while their bodies are still unstable. They are told what to watch for, but not how quickly danger can escalate. When they call with concerns, they may be reassured instead of examined. Reassurance feels kind. It can also be fatal. The system relies heavily on probability. Most women will be fine. That logic quietly sacrifices those who are not. It trains staff to expect normality even when signs suggest otherwise. This creates a trust fracture. Women enter care believing hospitals are places of rescue. When that belief breaks, fear intensifies, not fear of pregnancy alone, but fear of being unseen within it. Stories repeat with painful similarity. A woman reports pain, she is told it is anxiety. A woman reports shortness of breath, she is told it is normal recovery. A woman insists something is wrong, she is told to wait. By the time action comes, the window may have closed. Survival, when it happens, often carries cost. Injury that lingers, organs damaged, mobility altered, mental health fractured. These outcomes are rarely framed as systemic failure. They are framed as unfortunate outcomes of childbirth. Language matters here. When harm is normalized, it stops triggering reform. When injury is framed as acceptable risk, fear becomes reasonable. Women notice how quickly narratives shift after a crisis. Sympathy is offered, then silence. Questions fade, accountability dissolves. This silence teaches lessons. It teaches women that even when harm is visible, it may not change anything, that the system will continue as designed, that protection is uneven. So women adjust their expectations. They bring partners to appointments as witnesses. They document symptoms. They research protocols. They prepare scripts for how to demand care without being labeled difficult. This preparation is itself evidence of failure. Healthcare should not require performance to function. Survival should not depend on tone management. Yet many women understand that being believed is not automatic. It must be earned in the room. Calm voice, clear sentences, no tears if possible. The burden of credibility is heavy. When women talk about fear of pregnancy, this is often what they mean. Not fear of the body, but fear of navigating a system under strain. Fear of being alone inside institutional walls. Fear that something will go wrong and no one will move fast enough. This fear is rational. It is built from patterns, not paranoia, and it carries forward. Even women who survive pregnancy without major complications absorb these stories. They file them away. They share them quietly. They warn others without sounding alarmist. The system hears little of this. It measures outcomes, not trust. It tracks mortality, not fear. But fear shapes behavior. It shapes whether women seek care early or delay. It shapes whether they speak up or stay quiet. It shapes whether pregnancy feels like a supported transition or a test of endurance. By the time a woman leaves the hospital, the system considers the job mostly done. For her, something else has changed. She now knows how fragile safety can be. She knows how much depended on timing, luck, and who was listening. She knows that survival did not feel guaranteed. That knowledge spreads. It moves through communities. It reshapes how pregnancy is discussed. It hardens into caution. And it raises a final pressure point. If the system cannot be trusted to respond fully to the body, then culture steps in to explain the gap. That explanation does not always protect women. Sometimes it silences them. That is where the next layer begins. Chapter 3, Myths That Silence and Shape Fear. When systems fail consistently, culture rushes in to explain why. It fills gaps left by broken care, with stories that make fear easier to ignore. These stories are not always malicious. Many are inherited. Many are spoken with love. But their effect is the same. They silence. One of the strongest myths surrounding pregnancy is that it is natural, and therefore safe. Natural is used as reassurance. It suggests order. It suggests design. It suggests that concern is unnecessary. This idea collapses under scrutiny. Plenty of things are natural and dangerous. Pregnancy has always carried risk. What the myth does is shift responsibility. If pregnancy is natural, then harm becomes fate. If harm is fate, then failure disappears. This framing protects institutions and pressures women. Another myth says women are built for this. It sounds empowering. It often is not. It implies endurance without limit. It suggests that pain is expected and complaints are weakness. It frames suffering as proof of strength. Women absorb this early. They are taught to tolerate discomfort quietly, to avoid being dramatic, to push through. During pregnancy, this conditioning becomes dangerous. Warning signs are ignored because endurance is praised. Fear is swallowed because bravery is expected. When harm occurs, the myth remains intact. She was strong, she survived, or she did not. The myth does not change. There is also the myth of joy. Pregnancy is portrayed as glowing, fulfilling, and instinctive. Doubt is treated as failure. Fear is treated as ingratitude. Women who voice concern are told they are ruining the experience. This creates isolation. Women stop sharing honestly. They curate their emotions. They smile publicly and worry privately. They learn which parts of the experience are acceptable to express. Fear does not vanish in silence, it deepens. Another powerful cultural force is the idea that suffering is temporary and therefore acceptable. Pain will pass, the body will recover, everything will be worth it in the end. For some women this is true, for others it is not. Permanent injury is rarely discussed openly. Mental health decline is minimized. Loss of bodily autonomy is reframed as sacrifice. When outcomes fall outside the happy narrative, they are pushed aside. This teaches women that speaking honestly carries risk. They may be labeled ungrateful, negative, fearful, so they stop. In many communities, especially those shaped by scarcity or historical neglect, pregnancy is also framed as duty, family expectation, cultural continuity, resistance through birth. These pressures are heavy. Women are told that fear is selfish, that refusing pregnancy betrays ancestors, that choosing caution over expectation is weakness. This framing is powerful. It binds identity to endurance. When a woman says she is afraid, she is not just questioning pregnancy. She is questioning a role, a lineage, a narrative larger than herself. Culture responds by closing ranks. Even language reflects this. Pregnancy complications are often softened with euphemisms. Injury is reframed as challenge. Death is called tragedy without cause. These words dull urgency. They also erase accountability. Cultural silence around maternal harm has consequences. It blocks reform. It delays change. It keeps patterns intact. Fear becomes individualized. Each woman feels it alone, even though it is shared widely. This isolation benefits no one except the status quo. Women learn to police each other too. A pregnant woman expresses fear, and another tells her not to think that way. Not out of cruelty, but conditioning. The myth must be defended to remain believable. Fear becomes contagious only when named. Silence contains it. But containment has limits. In recent years, cracks have widened. Women speak more openly. They share experiences publicly. They challenge myths with lived reality. This visibility threatens old narratives. The response is mixed. Some listen, some resist, some accuse women of spreading fear. This accusation misunderstands the point. Fear already exists. Naming it does not create it. Naming it exposes its source. When women say they fear pregnancy, they are not rejecting life. They are rejecting neglect. They are rejecting silence. They are rejecting the idea that harm must be endured quietly. Culture has not caught up yet. The myths still circulate. They still shape conversations. They still discourage honesty. But they are weakening. Each story shared chips away at the illusion. Each refusal to minimize harm disrupts the narrative. Each demand for protection reframes the conversation. Fear, when acknowledged, becomes evidence. Evidence of systemic failure. Evidence of cultural pressure. Evidence that pregnancy is not just biological, but political, social, and structural. Ignoring this fear does not make pregnancy safer. It makes it lonelier. A society that demands birth while refusing to confront risk creates contradiction. It praises motherhood while neglecting mothers. It celebrates life while tolerating loss. Women see this clearly. That clarity reshapes decisions, it delays pregnancy, it reframes desire, it turns fear into caution. This is not hysteria, it is adaptation. Until systems respond with consistency and culture responds with honesty, fear will remain a rational response. Pregnancy will continue to be approached not only with hope, but with calculation. And the final truth is this: fear is not the enemy of life, silence is. Until fear is treated as evidence and not weakness, pregnancy will remain a risk women face alone.